Hello and welcome back to the Electronic Intifada podcast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Over the last 18 months of genocide, Israel, with financial, technological, and political support from the US and Europe, has attacked every single hospital in Gaza, destroyed every aspect of Gaza's healthcare infrastructure, executed paramedics and threw them into mass graves, hunted, threatened, kidnapped, tortured, and killed medical workers, skilled physicians, and hospital directors, and since March 2nd, prevented all medications, medical supplies, food, fuel, and basic essentials from entering Gaza, plunging 2 million people, half of them children, into an absolute catastrophe of health, medicine, and humanity itself. However, if you are a doctor in the UK and you speak up about any of this, you might lose your job and be accused of being anti-Semitic. Joining us to talk about this is Dr. Nadine Crowe. He's a British Jordanian doctor specializing in emergency medicine and previously worked as a bank worker in an NHS hospital, but was suspended and later resigned due to social media posts about Gaza. He is currently fundraising to clarify employment rights for NHS bank workers in England and advocate for the right to speak out against war crimes. Nadim, thank you so much for being with us today on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you for having me, Nora. It means a lot. Thank you so much.
Of course. So first off, before we get into the legal fights you've been pulled into over your advocacy for Palestinians who are experiencing a genocide, talk about your work and what made you want to become a doctor.
It's a difficult question to answer, because I think for all of us, you know, how do you know really what you want to be when you're 17 or 18? But I guess for a lot of us who end up in medicine, there's some kind of subliminal calling that you know, brings you into a world that is very difficult to us to ever want to leave. And I think for me, and it'll be a similar story for a lot of medics, I was, you know, academically successful at school. But I've always loved humanity, people, communicating, talking, meeting people. And I have this kind of innate sense of wanting to care in my personal life and also in my professional life. So I think from the outset, a career in medicine always seemed like the perfect calling. But of course, you don't know it's the perfect calling until you've been, you know, actually in the job and you've experienced it. And 15 years later, I'm still doing it and I still love it. So thankfully, it was the right decision, and one that my Jordanian mother is obviously very proud of, like every Arab mother should be.
It's fantastic. You know, as a healthcare professional, as someone who has dedicated his life to healing people, to treating people, to trying to mitigate pain, as you look at the situation in Gaza, especially in terms of the medical catastrophe there, and you know where your counterparts in the hospitals across Gaza are pleading with the world to make this genocide stop and bring Israel to account, what obligation do you feel you have, both personally and professionally, to speak up about what Palestinians are going through?
Personally, I think for all of us, we have an obligation to speak out. And that is because the world is glitching at the moment, and the moral compass seems to be not even backwards, it's just spinning around and around and around. And it's a very disconcerting place to be, because, you know, when I look back at when the Ukraine and Russia war started, there was this sort of united feeling that everybody had a feeling about what was going on, and we could speak freely, and our faces were in Ukrainian flags on Facebook, and there weren't people being suspended or losing their jobs. But with Israel and Gaza, this genocide and what's been happening to the Palestinians, as somebody born in Jordan with all of their family in Jordan, and obviously a huge Palestinian refugee population being there, it's always been part of my psyche. And I've always felt this huge anger and injustice as a human being. When you add on top of that the layer of being a doctor, and for me, an emergency doctor, you know, and working in a system which the NHS is falling apart, I don't think that's a surprise for anybody to hear. But generally, the vast majority of people that I care for on a day-to-day basis as an emergency doctor in the UK are people that want care more than they need care. If you look at the Gaza situation, you have a population there who need care. They need us. They need people like me. And if you're going to have a country like Israel so clearly act in this barbaric manner to cause mass casualties of women, children, and men, it's heartbreaking to feel that the layer of evil above that is that when people are being barbarically traumatized physically and psychologically, there's no medical support there anymore to be able to manage it. So not only is Israel trying to cause as much physical and psychological trauma as possible, it doesn't want people like me around to be able to heal. And that's a concept that, as a doctor, I cannot fathom. How can that be anything other than planned and other than a new layer of evil or level of evil that I just can't comprehend?
Yeah. And yeah, like if you speak out about it, the government will clamp down on you, and they will try to force you to be complicit with this evil, with this genocide. Let's talk a little bit about how the UK government is working to purge NHS workers. In December of 2024, Health Secretary Wes Streeting called on regulators to essentially root out healthcare professionals who criticize Israel's genocide in Gaza. How has this witch hunt unfolded within the healthcare community in the NHS? And how have you been personally impacted by this?
I want to be very clear from the outset that I feel strongly that post October the 7th, Israel thought that it now had the upper hand and the narrative for the whole world to turn around and say, well, any action we want to take against the Palestinians is now valid. If you want to ethnically cleanse it, we see why, go ahead and do whatever you want. And when that plan didn't come to fruition, when in fact what happened was that TikTok, Instagram, X, all of those platforms that gave access to the whole world to share stories and opinions on what was going on, Israel and every country supportive of it suddenly realized that they had a huge PR battle on their hands. And the way that AIPAC has its hands around the neck of many US politicians, though more subliminal and more insidious in a way, there is a similar problem in the UK. And then when you add to that as doctors, our morality and our moral standing has always been held against us as this sort of, you know, you are a doctor, you must act in this certain way. And if you don't, in fact, if you pretend to be human and you leave work and you have opinions on the world and politics and society, when you add those two things together, you've got a recipe for disaster. Then you get somebody like Wes Streeting who comes along and says, well, I'm at the helm of this. And a few people have made, or a few institutions like UK Lawyers for Israel, David Collier and his pseudonym Nasha Jew, have made these sweeping accusations against people like me who have dared to say, or have the courage to say that what's going on in Palestine against the Palestinians is not, it doesn't reflect humanity. Voices like his has basically empowered everybody now to say, well, if you're going to speak out, then you either are going to be disciplined, shamed publicly, called anti-Semitic, or lose your job. And the more that happens, the less we have the courageous few to stand forward and say, this can't happen anymore. And we can all work as conglomerates. I remember one of the first things, Miriam Francois saying to me when I spoke to her about what was going on, she said, make sure that you are part of a group. And I originally thought, when this happened to me and I'll, go into my story, let's all hide behind you know, a conglomerate like the, you know, the amazing work of Health Workers for Palestine, etc. But actually, that doesn't work. What works most powerfully is when you put a face to your name and you stand up as an individual and you say, "I'm not accepting this. And if you come at me, I'm going to fight and I'm going to name and shame." And I genuinely feel that the few of us now that have done that, we're changing the direction that the wind is blowing. But we need more and more people, and we need more and more platforms. And thanks to platforms like yours, the mainstream media are not going to tell our stories. We're now getting the word out against people like Caroline Turner at UK Lawyers for Israel, like Nasha Jew, like all of these groups that just want to demonize doctors. And we're saying we're not accepting it. And in my case, we will take legal action. And I have no guarantee that, you know, any of us are going to win our legal action. But it's actually, the winning is for me the cherry on the top. It's actually the journey to get to the trial, to be actually, you know, having these conversations and saying, oh, we're not accepting this as a status quo. In terms of my actual story, I've been a doctor at the Royal Free Hospital, or I used to be a doctor at the Royal Free Hospital in North London. I've been there for 15 years. It was also my medical school. I know that place like the back of my hand, and it knows me even better. And it would be it would be amiss if I didn't mention that it has a reputation or a nickname of being the Jewish hospital, because we operate in Northwest London. There's a huge, vibrant Jewish community there. We are one of the main hubs for Hatzolah, the Jewish ambulance, and probably wouldn't be the first place to work if you were an anti-Semite. I want to say that right from the outset. Probably wouldn't be the first place that you would say, "I want to provide my blood, sweat and tears every day," if you didn't like the Jewish population, or, you know, were going to be describing yourself as anti-Semitic. I arrived to do my ward round as I normally would. This was on the 14th of August last year. And about an hour and a half, 2 hours in, I received an email which was from Dr. Jane Horden, the responsible officer. She's the person that is a conduit between the NHS Trust and the General Medical Council that holds our licensing, saying some concerns have been raised, which I need to discuss with you. You are suspended essentially with immediate effect and won't be able to work any further shifts until a meeting, which my PA will organise. And you may want to organise appropriate representation at the meeting. Now, of course, my whole world imploded in that moment, because as a doctor, your immediate concern is, who have I hurt? You know, is this a serious clinical concern? Has a patient died under my care? And I assumed that the other staff in the department would know that this was happening. One, because we're running a hospital, and every member of staff that you lose means that an area is not covered, particularly in emergency medicine. So you would think that a responsible officer, the operative word being responsible there, would have at least let my colleagues know that they were going to be losing a member of staff that day. Of course, nobody knew. So I had the embarrassment, for want of a better term, to wander around asking various people in the department, "Do you know what I've done? What's going on?" And I was sent home because nobody knew what I'd done. I then went home and called the General Medical Council. I spoke to them on a web chat and said, "Is there something here that you have failed to tell me?" And they said, after about half an hour of looking, "There's nothing relevant on the system." And then I called the British Medical Association, who said, "You cannot just be suspended with no explanation, told to bring representation to a meeting. You have rights. Go back and ask what's going on." So I went back to Dr. Horden and I said, "I don't know whether I need to bring my feisty Jordanian mother with me to this meeting or a solicitor. Could you please tell me what I've done?" And her response was, "There is no grievance. I'll tell you what it is in the meeting, which is an informal meeting." So again, I've asked for specifics and I've been denied them. I've been suspended and then invited to an informal meeting. I mean, it's all rubbish.
Yeah.
So I end up at this meeting the following day at about 4 p.m. and I'm faced with Dr. Horden, the responsible officer, one of the heads of the human resources department, and also a colleague that I've brought with me as my representation. And Dr. Horden says to me, "My attention has been drawn to your activity on the platform X in relation to the Israel and Gaza conflict. So I sort of said, and I mean, in the back of my mind, I'm sort of thinking, I've never met this woman before. I don't know who you are other than by email and professional reputation. And kind of what's it got to do with you? So I said, okay, who made the complaint? Well, they want to remain anonymous. Okay, so what is the complaint? The posts could be potentially upsetting. Upsetting is quite a broad term, isn't it? Because it's potentially upsetting if somebody insults your favorite football team. It's potentially upsetting if somebody said they didn't like your hair that day. So there are lots of things that are potentially upsetting. So I said, well, you know, what is it that I've said that is potentially upsetting? There will be screenshots, I'm told, but these screenshots are not going to be shown or shared with me. So there's something in relation to the Gaza conflict, I hate that term, the Gaza genocide, on my X account, which has upset somebody for some reason. I'm then told, I'd advise you to delete the posts. So I go back and say, well, which posts do you want me to delete? Do you want me to delete all of my posts? Are there specific posts? I do have a right to expression and freedom of speech. So what do you want me to delete? And also, if you're now, as was described to me, going to put me through a 2 or 3 week investigation, then why would you want me to delete the posts which are surely there the evidence? That's why you've brought me into this meeting. That's why you've suspended me. So why would I be deleting the evidence? Won't that be held against me? Well, we've got screenshots, I'm told. Screenshots never presented. So I, at this point, have to say that I was sort of seeing red, for want of a better term, but trying to keep, you know, my decorum. And I said, look, you're sitting here and looking at a British Jordanian who has very strong feelings about this, and feelings that didn't emerge today and they didn't emerge on October the 7th. They've been here as long as I can remember having a consciousness. And it's conversations that have happened in my family and with my friends and my Palestinian friends. I was in Jordan on October the 7th. I said, if I want to share the pictures of a baby who's being beheaded by a bomb and say that this is disgusting, I'll do it. And by the way, Dr. Horden is a neonatologist. Her career is looking after babies. And I'm sitting here thinking, why is this hospital surprised that I'm angry about this? Why am I having to explain myself to this person I've never met before in this informal meeting on posts that I don't know, you know, I posted on X this morning. I couldn't go back and tell you what I've posted. If somebody wanted to have a rational conversation and pick up a post and say, this could be misconstrued in a particular way, what did you mean? I'm an adult. I can have a conversation. I can discuss my feelings and my emotions, and I can reflect on how somebody might be offended. What I won't do is have somebody essentially say that you cannot have a voice on this at all, and I want you to go away and delete it, or any voice or speech that you've made. And so my next question was, and this won't surprise anybody, are you accusing me of anti-Semitism? And I was told, that's not what I said. And I said, well, what are you accusing me of? Because you're about to put me through an investigation. What are you investigating? And who do you have on your panel that can sit in front of me and look me in the eye and act as some kind of morality police in this situation? And I was literally met with stammers to the extent that I said, you need to stop stammering and you need to answer my question. I was then told, you could bring a specialist on the conflict to your investigation to advise on what is acceptable. So I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Wait a minute. Are you asking me to provide a history lesson? And if you need a history lesson, you should have had it before you suspended me. And you should have provided it to yourself, not asked me to bring it after you put me through the stress of the last 24 hours, the having to leave work as a professional who's worked in this trust without a single complaint for 15 years. And now you want me to bring a specialist in because you don't think that I have what the ability or the experience to advise what I think is acceptable and have a discussion about it. The meeting ended shortly after that. I did exactly what I was asked to do. I went off to Dr. Rada Karmi and I said, Rada, can you please come to these meetings? She said, hell yeah, of course I can. I went to Miriam Francois and I said, can you come to this meeting? And she said, I'll absolutely come to the meeting. The colleague that had represented me in the meeting said, look, I think they will go lighter on you if you delete your posts. And I said, you have to remember in this moment, I've had to ring my parents and say, I could lose my job as a doctor. I'm trying to think, where's my income coming from here next? I mean, I can't work anywhere if I'm being investigated. And I'm also trying to balance my moral compass. So I'm in this kind of fight or flight mode. I need to keep my job, but I need to keep my morality. And my dad was amazing because he said to me, you know, if this is the sword that you die on, do you know what? Good luck. You know, let this be the fight that kills your medical career if it needs to be. And that kind of left me with this feeling of, you know what? Just go forward with this. Be who you are. If you cannot work as a doctor who has delivered nothing but, and I say this with the absolute pride, excellent care for 15 years, it's their loss. I'll find another career. And I know I will. So I deleted my posts and I sent an email to Dr. Horden and also the HR rep. And I said, I'm ready for your investigation. Just to let you know, I've deleted my whole account because I don't know which post you're upset about. So I've got no, if you're not going to say it's this one, and this one, the whole thing can go. But X allows you to reactivate it for the next 30 days if you want to bring it up for this formal investigation. I then wake up to an email that says, thank you for your action and reflection on posts that could upset people. You can now return to work and no further action will be needed. So part of me goes, well, that's a win, isn't it? I can go back to work and call my mum and say it's all over. But part of me's thinking, hang on a minute. Yesterday, you were telling me that I'm going through an investigation because of whatever this accusation was. You're saying that my posts were so severe that you removed me from work as a doctor with no explanation and no evidence. But now that I don't have a voice, you're happy for me to return to work. So I then I'm then told that I have to attend my department to speak to a consultant that I've known for 15 years to have this debrief about how I am going to control my expressions over the conflict in a way that won't upset people. And I sit there in this frankly patronizing meeting where I'm told, well, you know, so I say, well, okay, maybe I'll go and work with Health Workers for Palestine because that could be a way to speak to other people with similar feelings on it. And they go, well, don't they protest? Well, yeah, they protest. Well, I'm not sure about that. So I'm thinking, well, I keep having to say less and less severe things so that I'm a comfortable person for them to have around. And that meeting ends. I then have to send an email then goes out to say that I've accepted that I will and won't do X, Y, and Z, and I can go back to work. So I've now lost all of my shifts for the following 4 to 6 weeks. I get four shifts or something. I work them. And every shift I'm feeling more and more resentment for this place that I've given my life to. Thinking, who accused me? Are they in my immediate, you know, environment? Is it one of the nurses? I had received, by the way, a private Facebook message from a nurse about 2 months prior saying she was too afraid to walk down the corridor in case she would bump into me or one of my fellow Palestinians and we would attack her. So I was thinking, is it her? Could well be her. The language, you know, when I eventually got to see the email 4 months later seems pretty similar. And I decided that I couldn't work there anymore. And that, I guess, is, I've spoken a lot. I'm very aware of that. That's kind of where that got to, in terms of the immediate scenario of what happened to me. And then what follows is almost as diabolical, but I'll allow some air back into the room.
Yeah, I mean, that's just, it's such a, you know, the way that these administrations, and we hear this so much from not just medical workers, health professionals here in the US as well, and in Canada, but also, you know, students, members of faculty, you know, people who have dedicated their lives like you have to helping people. And if they have a conscience about seeing, you know, the shredded bodies of children day after day after day, there's this way in which administrations, either, you know, professional administrations like at a hospital or a university administration, is trying to not just silence those who are upset about what's happening in Gaza to these children, for example, but trying to make an edict that the only acceptable position, besides silence, complete silence, mm-hmm. is acceptance of the shredding of children in Gaza. And the way that it sounds like, you know, they were kind of making it up as they went along in your case.
Absolutely. And yeah. I want to be clear about what, so the only way I got to see my accusation, which was of anti-Semitism, of course, yeah. based on the IHRA, definition of anti-Semitism, which will hold up in no court and is set up to defend Israel and prevent any accusation,
criticism.
Any criticism, that was what I was looking for. And then the only time I got to see the posts was 5 months after. My posts, to be clear, I had been very strong with my language. I'd refer to the IDF as rapists and baby killers. I believe that to this day.
It's factual.
Reposted the horrific rape that had occurred of prisoners in the State Haman prison in response to one of the most disgusting pro-Zionist voices, Aviva Klumpas, and had said that this is the scum that you defend. I'd responded to a video, a post that Aviva Klumpas had made on the 10-month anniversary of October the 7th, where in my view, she had described all Gazans as terrorists. And I'd said that they were not terrorists, they were freedom fighters. Because you cannot say that Gazans are just, all of them are terrorists. And also we live in this world at the moment where as a pro-Palestinian or as a Palestinian, any form of resistance is terrorism. But if you are taking any violent action, no matter how severe, as an Israeli or a Zionist, then that is defensible self-defense. And I don't accept that. And I'm an intelligent human being who has never harmed a fly. And the way that the law is changing day by day so that any speech that remotely relates to these prescribed organizations, you can end up with the terrorist police at your doorstep or at the airport, is, again, it is there to silence our voices. Now, the point with doctors and the point that, you know, the reason that people like Caroline Turner, UK Lawyers for Israel, all of these groups are so obsessed is that we do have a higher moral standing. And the reason that we have a higher moral standing in society is the reason that we have to speak out when things like this happen, right? Because we're generally believed to be people that care about all people. I, on a daily basis for the last 15 years, have dealt with people that don't match the moral compass that I work with. And I treat them all the same. I treat them with care and kindness, and I owe everybody, every single one of them, the same care. Every Israeli person that I've treated in London in A&E having a panic attack because they have families in Israel, that doesn't divide me from them. That makes me have empathy. I'm sitting there thinking, what's going to happen in Jordan next? How would I feel if my family was there? Irrelevant of what's happening with the conflict, you don't lose empathy. If your mother or your daughter or your child is in Israel and there is a war going on, I'm not surprised you're having panic attacks. I'm not surprised you want help. And I'm there to give it to you. And actually, I empathize with that feeling more because of how I feel. It's that if you can silence doctors, if you can weaponize the fear of, particularly if you also use the conflation with Judaism, if you can say that Jews now are too afraid to even be able to access healthcare in England, it is such a strong weapon to defend Israel and Zionism. It's almost the ultimate weapon. We are such an at-risk people that we can't even safely access healthcare. Now, what they don't have is any example of any of us harming anybody. And until they do, until somebody can replace the number of cards I have from Jewish patients thanking me for my care, the number of emails and messages I've received on social media from Jewish patients asking who they should send letters of disgust to the Royal Free to for the way that I've been treated, until you can show me Nadim Crowe treated a patient differently because they're Jewish, you don't have a weapon. The GMC doesn't have a weapon. The General Medical Council must stop listening to Caroline Turner and every complaint she makes under whatever guise she wants to use to, you know, look at doctors like Dr. Rehana Ali. She's been suspended for 18 months as a senior consultant in neurology. I'm waiting to see a neurologist. I'm a doctor in a hospital. I've been waiting 6 months and have another 12 months to wait to see one. And the fact that she believes that what's going on in Israel, and yes, she's severe with her language, is a disgrace, means that she cannot work as a doctor for 18 months. Now, if you're more disgusted by our words than you are about what's going on in Israel against the Palestinians, then, as it happened for me, because the NHS supported what the Royal Free did to me when I complained to NHS England, I'm afraid my moral compass and that of Rehana Ali are too high for you. It's too high for the NHS. And if you only want doctors to be operating in the NHS or any health system around the world who are going to stay silent or who are not going to speak their mind, well, I'm afraid you've got to put it in our job description before you employ us. Because if you walked into most medical departments and you said, who agrees with Dr. Crowe, leave now, I think you'll find that most of the department will leave. Yeah. The only difference is I spoke out.
Yeah. The fact that they are ready to sacrifice these good doctors in a failing health system for the sake of, giving Israel cover for its genocide is just, despicable. It's rotten.
About 6 or 8 weeks, maybe slightly longer before this happened, I was asked by my department to take under my wing a doctor who is from Gaza, who was under siege in Al-Shifa Hospital with a baby that was 1 month old, wife a pediatrician. He was under siege for 40 days and 40 nights. He escaped via the Rafah border, having paid tens of thousands to get over it. And he escaped Gaza to come and work as a doctor at the Royal Free Hospital. So he was working side by side as my junior in the hospital that I was then suspended from, having said X, Y, and Z is happening in Palestine. Now, we're at a point now where can he not have a phone case with his own flag on it? Can he work at hospital, or is he a terrorist? And there's now going to be complaints about the fact that you have a Palestinian working in a London hospital. Where does this dehumanization end? You know, you've had the Palestinians having to turn to the watermelon because their own flag has become illegal or banned within their own land. And then you have a nurse who wants to wear a Palestinian flag on a badge being told that actually those colours, forget the flag, those colours are now a symbol of terrorism and alienation. We cannot accept that. Palestine is a country. The Palestinian people are people. They have a flag. They have a history, they have a culture, they have a cuisine, much of which has been borrowed by Israel, stolen by Israel. And now in England, somehow this horrific fascism from the government in Israel, the Knesset, has seeped its way all the way down to little old me or this nurse that can't speak out. This is morally depraved. And I and anybody else with a soul and a moral compass will not stand for it. We won't stand for it because this is a once in a lifetime moment in history. I will look back at this as an old man and look back at the genocide of Gaza, which is now forever written into Israeli and Jewish history because of the conflation, which has written this awful thing into a Jewish history, that when we have amazing Jewish people standing side by side with us saying this is wrong and it's not what we stand up for. If we don't speak out now, if doctors cannot speak out against genocide, as my colleague said, and I won't complete the sentence, then the world is absolutely effed. It is. We are supposed to be, as medics, we're supposed to be the moral standard of care and caring. And the NHS and the world has shown me that if you don't stick to your own moral compass, don't rely on any governments or any organizations.
It is truly, truly depraved. Absolutely. I mean, I was Just recently on the Electronic Intifada podcast, I interviewed a certified nurse midwife who has been working, you know, with a stellar record, much like yourself, in one of the West Coast's, you know, most prominent teaching hospitals here in the Bay Area, UCSF Medical Center. And she went to Gaza on a medical mission a year ago, worked shoulder to shoulder with other midwives at the Emirati Hospital in Rafah. And when she came back, you know, she was wearing a watermelon pin on her badge alongside, you know, LGBTQ pride pins and a Black Lives Matter pin. And she was suspended. And just recently, the medical administration, the hospital administration filed a letter of intent to fire her because she wouldn't back down. She wouldn't take off a pin from her badge, showing that she had solidarity with women in Gaza who were being subjected to this genocide. You know, the destruction of, you know, the largest IVF fertility clinic in Gaza. A war crime, a crime against humanity. And, you know, there she is working in a fertility clinic and at this major hospital, being fired for having empathy with women who were giving birth with no anesthesia. You know, it's just, it's like, it's, it makes you insane.
I mean, one day this will end.
Yeah.
One day this will either end with the justice that the Palestinians and the land and everything and the rights that they deserve, or... And I don't even want to imagine this happening.
Yeah.
It will end with a successful in the eyes of Zionism and Israel, the successful ethnic cleansing and complete takeover of the land, and, you know, continued mass murder, and, you know, the second and final Nakba. And whichever way it ends, it'll be too late to go back and say, I wish I'd stood by what I feel in here. I wish I stood by with what I know to be right. And a lot of people, a lot of these organizations will suddenly turn around and go, wasn't that horrific? Didn't we do the wrong thing? I wish I'd done this differently. And I don't want, and the midwife that you speak about and the colleagues that feel the same way about me, we're not going to take that risk. It has to be now. And what comes with that is abuse. My whole life has been shaken up, trying to find new work and trying to find a new working environment where I'm as respected and as well known as what I could build up at the Royal Free Hospital, where I've had to get over sleepless nights and just the anger at somebody telling me I should bring an expert to justify how I feel about this. But it's all worth it. It has to be, because this is all much bigger than me or you or anybody. But all of these stories, all of these injustices, they need to be spoken aloud because it resonates with people. And the night I decided to make the video that appears on my Crowd Justice, I knew I needed to make a video because it's very easy to demonize just a couple of sentences on X. If you present yourself as you are, and I hope that I come across to people as a reasonable, decent person, it's much harder to demonize that. And the moment that video went out, I suddenly connected with like-minded people all over the world going through the same thing, too afraid to reach out for support and to tell their story or to know what to do, thinking that this was just going to be the end of their career, their lives, etc. So I just take this platform to implore people, we're all behind you. Speak out as you, speak out as individuals. And then the groups that exist, the amazing groups like Health Workers for Palestine, etc., platforms like yours, Nora, will be there. You're there to elevate us. But we just need more faces of morality out there.
I appreciate that. Thanks, Nadim. Well, there's we went on a tangent, but I want to circle back to what happened. You know, since you were returned to the hospital, and but after your Twitter X account, you had deleted it. I also want to talk a little bit more about the influence of groups like the UK Lawyers for Israel, who these people are, the influence that can be traced, you know, from their, you know, harassment, their real like witch hunting of anybody who speaks out, but especially, you know, medical professionals about the genocide in Gaza, and how their you know, how they maneuver within kind of the political echelons inside the UK government to enact the sort of, you know, this sort of purge that that politicians like Wes Streeting are now you know, taking on. So bring us back to what happened, to, you know, up to the present moment, and this now legal fight that you're engaging in.
So I worked those four shifts. I decided that my comfortable work environment had become too hostile for me to continue in, and I arranged a meeting with the chief medical officer. And I, again, had known the chief medical officer since my junior days because I was her senior house officer. So I worked, you know, when I was a very junior doctor. And she sort of stared at me at this meeting where I said, look, I don't believe what happened to me was correct. In fact, I was crying my eyes out. And I got this sort of pseudo empathy and a kind of response that I can't comment as to whether what happened to you is according to policies, because I'd have to look them up. Again, I found mind blowing, because you'd expect a chief medical officer would know the local policies, but that's sort of an aside. I informed her that I was going to raise a formal grievance, and she assured me that the grievance would be dealt with according to the trust's grievance policy. Now, as you mentioned in my introduction, I have always worked via the bank, which for people that don't know that, I'm not sure that that's an international term. It means that I, at one point, I stepped out of full-time contracted medicine, and I book shifts usually a month or 6 weeks in advance, and I'm paid essentially by the hour. But I've always worked at the Royal Free solely. I've worked there for 25, 30 hours a week. In fact, it's a joke to some people. I work often more than a full-time or even part-time employee, because I also work as an actor in the West End, and by the oils behind me, I'm a perfumer as well. And
I was going to ask.
it's not a small pharmacy that I keep.
It's fantastic.
So I wrote out a grievance. I wrote a grievance saying that I perceive this as a discrimination. I perceive this as a discrimination of me as a British Jordanian, me and my protected beliefs, particularly in the shadow of the David Miller case, which people can read up if they don't know about it, a really important case which is being appealed at the moment. And I believe that this treatment of me in terms of this, you know, anonymous complaint, don't share the evidence, informal meeting, but I've already been suspended, it doesn't match any kind of employment law or policy that can exist. And my employee sort of terms of employment as a bank worker are very clear that any grievances will be dealt with as per the trust grievance policy. Now, in terms of all other policies, so I contacted the trust to say, by the way, which policy did you use against me? And they sent me two policies, and both of them said these exclude bank workers. So I said, well, even your grievance policy says it excludes bank workers, but my contract says, see the grievance policy. So you're sending me in a circle. Where are the bank worker policies? Never heard back. No response.
Again, making it up as they go along.
Right. To go along. You can do whatever you want, apparently. In the meantime, I had been phoned by a very senior professor at the Royal Free who had received a barrage of abuse on social media, having expressed his concern as an ex-military doctor that starvation was being used as a weapon of war against the Gazans by a population that was so strongly linked to that within their history and the horrific actions of the Nazis. And of course, he got a barrage of anti-Semites. He then got dealt with a legal document by the Royal Free saying, essentially, delete your posts, say you'll never say anything about it again on social media, or you know that this is going to get ugly, and then a letter from UK Lawyers for Israel basically saying you're an anti-Semite. He did not get threatened with suspension. He did not get threatened with an investigation. And there was a sudden concern as to why does Nadeem Hadadeen Crow, this British Jordanian, get treated so differently to a white British doctor who actually has been given a formal accusation of anti-Semitism and a legal document. So on the surface, it appears that he had a more severe accusation against him, yet he had a kind of get out of jail free card. Sign this, won't say any more about it, get on with it. And he was concerned about that. He was also generally disgusted, again, that a hospital had acted in that way, but also to an extent in the fact that he had been victim of it, because he did delete his posts and did want it to go away. Again, that fight or flight reaction. So the feeling of being discriminated against, of being harassed, of being sort of pushed into this corner, ambushed is the word I use, in a way that they probably thought that I was just going to collapse and fall. They'd get an action and then they could kind of make the whole thing go away and go back to whoever had made the complaint and say, well, look, we spoke to him and now he's never going to say anything. Isn't that great? My grievance was ignored. It was supposed to be responded to within 5 days. I got a response about 6 weeks ago. And that was when at least two solicitors had come on board. Do you want us to look at your grievance now? We've got some opportunity to do it. Absolutely not. We don't have a relationship anymore. My grievance was ignored. I went to Bynman's, a very big legal team in England, big solicitors, who read what had happened to me and just said, we've seen this happen, but this is diabolical. They wrote a letter to the trust, ignored. I then put my filing into the Employment Tribunal. And in the UK, Employment Tribunal disputes have to be looked at by ACAS, which are essentially a group of employment law advisors who can mediate between an employee and employer in the hope that it doesn't have to go to court and somebody can take some responsibility for actions. And that period lasts 30 days before it then goes into that hasn't worked. 30 days, absolutely ignored. So then the Employment Tribunal application kicks in. The other side have to file an Employment Tribunal document 3 in response to my ET document 1. And they have, I think, 28 days or 30 days to do it. And on the 11th hour of the 30th day, suddenly a solicitor comes on board saying, oh, we don't know what your claim is and we deny everything. I was like, what can I expect? I mean, at this point, it's just ridiculous.
Because of course, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, because of why would I expect you to have any dignity, right, professionalism, right, morality at this point? You've shown me all along, you know, right from the beginning, had you called me into an actual informal meeting and had a discussion with me as a human being, had you had the courtesy of going through the grievance procedure with me, we wouldn't be in this position. And at this point, I have to tell you, I was ill, physically and psychologically ill. I had to go through a counselling process. I couldn't sleep because I was constantly having dreams about Dr. Horden, somebody I wouldn't wish a dream upon anybody about. Odd dreams about her being in Jordan with me and basically not allowing me to do anything. So my grandma would offer me my favourite meal and she would say no. Stupid dreams, but just things that had suddenly got into my psyche. And finally, I got a call from or a Twitter message from somebody who saw the video that I put up, which led to kind of my case getting some traction, who said, I really think that your case is important and you should, though you could self-represent, which was what I was doing, I think you should crowdfund for proper legal representation. And I launched my Crowd Justice page, and before I knew it, 10,000, 20,000, 30,000, we've now surpassed £40,000. And I'm now represented by an amazing solicitor who feels so strongly about the cause, Liana Wood, and counsel from an amazing barrister, Elizabeth Grace, who is also on board now. And on Tuesday last week, I had my preliminary hearing, which is the hearing with the judge and counsel on board to basically say, what are the claims? And the claims that have been agreed are harassment, direct discrimination. And then on top of that, the addition of the responsible officer, the person who said I could bring an expert on the conflict, who from all of the freedom of information I've got and the subject access requests I've done, I can't see any evidence of any conversations happening between her and anybody else, according to policy. You know, suspension in the NHS is reserved for the most severe actions. I've seen
such as harming a patient or harming a coworker or yes,
come to severe harm in our own trust, not suspended. Those things are very quickly covered up and dusted over and people have conversations. But for this, no, you need to be removed. So this is now a case of those claims going against both the Royal Free Hospital and also Dr. Jane Horden, who, in terms of the treatment I had, the discrimination that I felt came directly from her actions and from her words, which I have no evidence of support or direction from the Royal Free. I don't have a policy that says that this is what was followed. And I don't have an explanation as a result of grievance. And I need answers. I need answers on behalf of myself. And I need answers on behalf of everybody else that I know has gone through this. Lots of information has come out, by the way, from this. Lots of freedom of information requests have come forward. People have suffered at the hands of the same people. The same people have been involved with similar hospital trusts, similar groups. And then what ties a lot of these things together, and not in my case, are groups like UK Lawyers for Israel, who sell themselves as a group in London defending the rights of Israel. So defending the rights of a foreign entity whilst disrupting the careers and reputations of UK employers, whilst also removing professionals and like doctors and lawyers and nurses and pharmacists from serving the UK population, of whom only 1% are Jewish, let alone Zionist. I see that as disproportionate and I see that as discrimination myself, especially as there is no evidence to show that any Jewish patient or Zionist patient or anybody for that fact has been treated differently or come to harm. That's really important. None of us would ever, ever do that. In fact, how do people think that we feel when I sit in a hospital clinic with the name badge Dr. Nadim Crow or Nadim Hadadin Crow, and a patient says to me, where are you from? And I said, I'm British Jordanian. Oh, we're neighbours. And I'm thinking, well, I live in Islington and you live in Crouch End. I mean, what is that what you mean? No, because your family are from Jordan and I'm a British Zionist who has a house in Israel. We're neighbours. And she said to me, this specific patient, you know, the conflict, that word again, has really opened my eyes. And I thought, this is going to be a warm conversation of what's happening in Palestine is terrible. And what I was faced with was, we have cars in Israel, they only have donkeys. And I was thinking, what the hell? You know, do I have to put up with this because I'm a doctor? Does it matter? Do we get to be protected as doctors of Arab background who are working? Do we get any sense of protection from our patients? No, we have to take whatever comes at us because we're doctors. That is another thing I wholeheartedly disagree with. I have a right as a professional and as a human being and as a doctor to also be protected. And post October the 7th, I did have this concern of, is my name alone going to bring discomfort to people? And do I need to act in a different way to make people feel that I'm not a threat? You know, I'm having these thoughts when I'm thinking, God, it's Palestinians that are having bombs dropped on them. Anyway, again, that's an aside. So the Employment Tribunal initial hearing ended. I'm very happy with the claims. The ridiculous thing is that I actually won't get my day in court until June 2026. So a system which is set up to mean that claims can only be brought within 3 months so that evidence is fresh and that people can speak, you know, and know that things are accurate. I'm going to be 40 and a bit by the time that happens. And the NHS probably won't exist then because it's being dissolved and people won't work in their environments. And by then, hopefully the ICJ has formally called this a genocide. And the environment that the discussions I'm going to be having in court are going to be with Netanyahu in prison, hopefully. And people have said to me, you know, don't you want to just give this up? Absolutely bloody not. This gives me a year to keep telling this story. This gives me a year to keep raising money to have the strongest fight in court that I can have so that we can have a legal basis for everything that comes up against people from the future. Going back to UK Lawyers for Israel, UK Lawyers for Israel weaponizes the word legal, right? So it goes to the General Medical Council and it says, you know, we've got Natasha Hausdorff, this barrister who sits in Parliament and very eloquently says that, well, there's no genocide and the Palestinians didn't exist and Gaza, you know, there's no starvation. It's that the Hamas is stealing all the food. All this stuff that we know as Hezbollah is absolute rubbish. They sit behind this very convenient title, UK Lawyers for Israel, and a garden centre whose member of staff has worn a Palestinian badge goes, oh, hell, UK Lawyers for Israel. What are they going to do if we don't fire that member of staff? But Caroline Turner, who heads this up, who most of the complaints that I've seen going to the GMC and other groups, she's just another person. In fact, as far as I'm concerned, she's as close to a Karen as internationally recognized can be. She's a Zionist Karen. She sits there and said, somebody felt uncomfortable buying a TV from this shop because somebody had the Palestinian flag on their badge and they had to go to another shop to buy it. And I've had that badge removed from the person and on it goes to the UK Lawyers for Israel website. And we're supposed to celebrate that. In my mind, that's pathetic on every level. It's pathetic. If that's a win, I'm afraid you need to really reassess your life. But it is having the power for doctors to lose their jobs and to lose their careers. And what I'm going to say to people is, if you get a complaint from UK Lawyers for Israel, if you get a complaint from Natcha Jew, you know, there was another X handle which was called NHS Watch 1948, which was solely there to hunt doctors, see what they were putting on social media and to get them, you know, accused of anti-Semitism. If you see complaints from these people, you need to understand the background is malicious. It is malicious. It is there for a purpose. And unless you are going to analyze their accusation on the background of their intention, then you, the General Medical Council, have no right to use their accusations against people. And I have some respect for the General Medical Council because I've seen a complaint that came against me close to October 2023 of other posts, which in my opinion were much more severe language than I used recently, was on an account that was linked to my employer and said that I was a doctor. By the way, the account that was held against me didn't say I was a doctor, didn't say where I worked, and had a picture of me in Jordan about 15 years ago, looking very young, fresh and different. And the GMC threw that complaint out and said, I'm afraid doctors are allowed to have, you know, political opinions. So I do say to the GMC, well done, because, you know, you clearly do have some people working on your board that understand that we are just human beings with opinions. But these groups, again, they hide. They hide between UK Lawyers for Israel, David Collier, who I think we're pretty certain now is the Natcha Jew, who has a website that produces profiles against us, puts our names up saying, you know, doctor from London is a raging anti-Semite. There will be people going onto Natcha Jew's website to find out who are the doctors with high moral standing who spoke against Israel and wanting them in preference. Because there will be people out there, there will be patients out there who will want to know which doctors working in the NHS worked for the IDF. Are we allowed an opinion on that? Which doctors have actually gone out since October 2023 and have gone to assist in Israel? And do patients have the right to express fear over being treated by those doctors? Or is it only Zionist patients who are allowed to express fear or be fearful? That is discrimination against, and none of us are going to stand for it. It yeah. cannot be that accusations of anti-Semitism have any more power or weight than accusations of anti-Arabism, anti, you know, Islam, anti-Palestinianism. It can't be that a Zionist doctor or professor like Dr. Liz Lightstone, who writes for the Times of Israel and has articles set, you know, that are titled why it is not right to say that Islam is not ISIS, or posts or shares a picture that has a wardrobe of a reporter, a civilian, and a Hamas fighter in Gaza with the title, "Somewhere in Gaza, someone is deciding what to wear to work today." I find that highly offensive. In the words of the Royal Free, I find that highly upsetting. But I know, having made a report to the General Medical Council myself, other colleagues have made it, those posts have been not defended, but justified as being not anti-Arab and not anti-Palestinian and not offensive enough for any action to be taken. So if we're going to say that's the gold standard, I think you have to. We have to now expect all of these bodies to hold any other, you know, accusation that comes against people like me against that. And I go, well, why is what I said a problem, but this is okay? And I'll tell you why. The accusation of anti-Semitism, or any accusation of anti-Israelism, is much more powerful than any. In fact, I would say most any yes. Accusation against anything. Even harm to a patient.
It's astonishing. I keep thinking about all of these, nurses and, lower level physicians, people who just got their medical degree and are looking for jobs, and are seeing that, if they have an opinion, especially a public opinion, about the shredding of children in Gaza, that they might not be able to work as a doctor after going through so much, so many years of medical school and trying to achieve their life's goal of being someone who heals people. What advice do you have for up-and-coming physicians, medical workers, nurses, paramedics, who are seeing what's happening to you and other physicians? So what advice and also, what do you hope for in the next generation of medical professionals?
The overriding message I have is that when it comes to Israel and the Gaza genocide, fear will always be weaponized. Your own fear will be weaponized against you by your employer. Other groups like UK Lawyers for Israel weaponize fear for the employer. Then that comes down to you as the employee. And then you become this head on a stick. Look what happened to this person. So I don't want to do it. You have to decide how loudly you want to speak based on what you feel about it. There's no other way that I could be, right? Other than it, if I was another way, it would be destroying me in a different way to what my experience, the period of destruction I had from that. I implore you, before you take action, this is my sort of caveat. You have to accept the action that you take within the realms of your life. I am able to support myself financially at the moment because I have other incomes from other jobs. That being said, I never thought that acting in perfumery was going to be my fallback. I always thought that would be medicine, but weird how the world works. If you're a single mother working on a UK ridiculously pathetic nursing income, and you losing work or being suspended for a period is going to destroy your life, then I understand the silence. Because I don't have the responsibilities you have, and therefore I have to take the burden from you. So anybody in my position who has that ability, we have to take the burden off the others to do that, because not everybody is as lucky as we are to be able to do it. You have to also stand your ground immediately. I've never been subject to a disciplinary, so I didn't know what it entailed. I didn't know that it wasn't normal. If you think that something in your sixth sense tells you what's happening is not right, it's probably not right. And I knew from the minute it happened, it wasn't right, but I didn't have the jigsaw pieces to put together. You at any point in a disciplinary process can stop and say, I need evidence, I need time, I need to know exactly what the accusation is, and I need to be able to respond. And I need, particularly in the case of a suspension, complete justification as to how this decision has been made and who's been involved. And also, if you want, other examples of when suspension has been brought in and why such a severe measure has been taken. And with many, if not all, disciplinary processes, if they are done in a poor way like mine was, you can raise a grievance immediately. And on the whole, that will stop a disciplinary process until the grievance is answered. And you will suddenly be faced by an HR department that has to answer questions that they're probably not prepared to answer. The next thing is sharing the burden, but having the confidence to be a face and a name. And by sharing the burden, I mean, reach out to people like me, you know, reach out to people like Dr. Ali, you know, reach out to you know, anybody you know or resonates with you in the way they communicate their story, and stand up for your moral compass. I know I'm an excellent doctor that will never bring anybody to harm, whatever you believe. And there are other protected beliefs which don't get this kind of treatment, you know, and you need to look around at what those protected beliefs are. You need to think what other beliefs you have, particularly those that sit under the Equality Act, and how you would react if those things were being held against you. And when you do that, it puts a lot of things in perspective. In terms of what I hope for the future of doctors and juniors, because I can imagine a lot of particularly doctors of Middle Eastern background, Palestinian background, a lot of Arab and Palestinian doctors really want to come and work in the UK for a period. And I can see this now being a place where they go, I wouldn't even dream of it. I really, really hope that the wind turns to such a direction that people like Wes Streeting, people like Keir Starmer, who have defended these atrocities, see their day in the international courts, and that we are watching a documentary on Netflix about them having to explain themselves the same way that, you know, these war criminals in the past have had to. And we see these as we see the next generation who have brought us a lot of hope via platforms like TikTok, which, by the way, I hate in every other form because I'm basically a 40-year-old that doesn't understand it. I've tried it. I don't get it. We see the TikTok generation who have empowered everybody with their voices. We see their moral compass as the lesson for the future. We have to shape the world that we want to live in for ourselves. I hope to be alive for another 40, 50 years. And I hope to be part of the journey to an endpoint that I want to be part of and look back and be proud of, and be part of the curation of a society and a planet that we all want to be proud of. And at the moment, it's being controlled by people who shouldn't be in control, creating a world that I'm not proud of, and I refuse to be silent on. And if that feeling in your heart and gut is that you refuse to be silent too, then speak out, because the silence will destroy you.
Indeed. Thank you for that. I think it is so important to keep holding on to that vision of a just world, in, you know, and you know, it's so important, because every day we're in this cycle of watching the worst things we've ever seen in our lives. You know, those of us who are not in Gaza, for the people in Gaza, it is an indescribable horror, and to see the world capitulating to every demand that that the perpetrators of this horror have is you know, it is not the world we deserve. And it's not the world that anybody should be subjected to. And so I think keeping that in mind and speaking out, and not just to protect yourself and your colleagues, but to protect the vision of this future that we all need and we all deserve, is really important.
And I think that you know what you're saying is the truth when somebody tries to stop it. It's very clear that that's almost the absolute signal that you're on the right moral track. Because if you can't get people on board with your PR to be agreeing by now, the only thing you can do is silence what you don't want the world to hear or think. And those that are always going to be the first victims are those with a, I guess, quantitative platform, the likes of NECAP and people that have got hundreds of thousands of followers, or those with a qualitative platform, which are those seen to have a good judgment of the world or moral standing. And that's when your healthcare workers come in. And that's what we're seeing.
That's right. Dr. Nadeem Hadidin Crow, it has been an absolute honor and a pleasure to talk to you. And if people want to learn more about your case and learn more about the fundraising campaign that you're doing to, you know, protect your own profession, but also set a precedent, like you said, for your colleagues, where can they go?
So I'm on everything except TikTok.
on Instagram. Give it a few months,
I'm Dr. Nadeem Crow on Instagram. I'm Nadeem H. Crow on X. And then importantly, the Crowd Justice page, which I think, Nora, you'll be able to link for people.
Yes, we will.
Even if it's a penny and you put a word of support, it all means something. And my court case is now going to be 7 days long, and I suspect it's going to end up costing 60, 80, perhaps £100,000 for this, which is ridiculous, because the money that the Royal Free Hospital will be paying to defend it will be public money, which would otherwise be spent on healthcare, when in fact they could just have the, I guess, moral high ground and actually try and solve this problem. But again, so
stunning.
It is stunning. So, you know, if you feel able to support the Crowd Justice page, and also if you need help, advice, support, then please connect, send a message to me, and I'll be there as quickly as I can.
Incredible. And as you said, we will put not just the link to the Crowd Justice page for your case, but also your social media links as well. We'll put a placeholder for your TikTok account that will surely come, I assume. I just want to thank you again, and please keep us posted on your case and the cases of your colleagues. I speak on behalf of all of us and our audience. Thank you for speaking out, and thank you for your moral courage. Thank you for your hands in the work that you do, and thanks for being with us on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you again. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you.